are Locked On Giants, your daily New York Giants podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, New York Giant fans. Welcome to another edition of Locked On Giants, part of the Locked On Podcast family, your team every day. My name is Patricia Traina. I cover your New York Giants for a variety of places. Follow me on Twitter at Patricia_Traina, and you can find links to all my articles. You can ask questions. We have Twitter Thursday coming up, so make sure you get your questions in and tag them Ask P-Train. And you can also get caught up on past shows of the Locked On Giants podcast. We're trying to do a show every day leading up to the draft, so it's a busy time. And in continuing with our pre-draft coverage, I'm happy to have on the line with me Matt Waldman, who is the director and author of the Rookie Scouting Portfolio, RSP. And Matt, thanks so much for taking time out of your schedule to come on with me.
Hey, Patricia, it's a pleasure. Thanks for having me on again.
My pleasure, my pleasure. So, folks, for you, those who don't remember the last time Matt was on, his RSP basically covers the offensive skill position players. He does quarterbacks, running backs, receivers, and tight ends. And of those, there are probably three positions that the Giants might be looking at. So we're going to talk a little bit about some of those positions to start things off. And I think, Matt, we have to start off with the elephant in the room, which is the quarterback position. Now, since we last spoke, obviously the combine went down, the pro days have gone down. Right now teams are finishing up visits. What has changed in your estimation based on, you know, what's come out, the measurables, what you've seen on tape, what you've seen at the workouts, and so on and so forth?
Sure. I think, if anything, it's been more of a confirmation of what I've seen on film, and then maybe some slight positive reinforcement of that. For instance, you know, looking at the velocity in which these players threw the football, I thought that it was telling confirmation of what I saw on tape about guys like West Virginia's Will Greer and Boise State's Brett Rypien, both guys who were kind of knocked for their arm strength, but maybe unnecessarily so. And so there was additional confirmation for that for me. And then I think that really the rest kind of just held the players in the road who were, you know, considered some of the top prospects, including Kyler Murray and Dwayne Haskins. I think that those guys performed well enough that there wasn't anything glaring about what they did or didn't do that hurt their standing in terms of how I evaluated them.
Now, in terms of what's come out amongst the media, it just seems like now people are starting to say that Haskins is starting to slide down a little bit in that first round range. I mean, do you agree with that assessment? Do you, or is it just, you know, maybe he was graded too highly? I mean, where exactly does he stand? Because there just hasn't been a consensus on where Dwayne Haskins should probably fit into the first round.
Yeah, I mean, I think part of it, you can look at it two ways. If you look at it based on what I think his ability shows, and if you're just watching, if you've been studying and watching him and you've seen enough of his game before all of this pre-draft hoopla, then you probably would say him sliding to the end of the first round or the early second round is probably makes sense based on his ability. But the NFL and the way they approach the quarterback position, as we all know, tends to inflate the importance of anybody who might give a first-round caliber grade. So as a result of that, you might look at this and say, oh, well, this is kind of the changeable attitude of you know, teams and scouts and media as they learn more about the player or overanalyze the pre-draft information. Because we look at that pre-draft information, and I kind of look at this whole process as like, you know, quarterback has a lot of parallels to performance crafts, like, you know, improvisational acting or dance or music. And so as a result of that, sometimes even the dynamics of, say, playing on the field is like performing on stage. You're going to get your most information from that. But the pre-draft process, these all-star games, are a lot like auditions. And same with the pro days and the combine. And auditions are kind of like simulated performances, but they're simulated in a way where you almost get a chance to game the system a little bit and how to create a good impression. And so it almost creates a whole other kind of arena of what to be good at. You have to be good at auditioning as opposed to just good at performing. There are differences in that. And I think that with somebody like Haskins, it's easy to kind of pick apart certain things with his game. And then you pick apart that he's only played 1 year, and the decision maker is going to look at that and say, from a risk management standpoint, a 1 year starter is going to impose a greater amount of risk when it comes to, you know, investing a lot of money in him compared to a guy who started for 2 or 3 years or had at least a longer track record. And I think that's what happened with Haskins, because his ability, I mean, I think is good enough that you can say he has the potential to become a capable starter in the NFL.
Now, Matt, a question I get a lot from listeners and readers is, where would Josh Rosen have fit into the rankings? And again, everybody, you know, has them differently. Some people will say that, you know, because he has the year of experience, he would have been, you know, ahead of the rookies. And I don't think that's necessarily a fair, you know, comparison, because, you know, he's got, like I said, he's got a year of experience. But if you're talking strictly college tape to college tape, where would you have Rosen fit in into the current quarterback class?
He would have been easily the number one player. And, you know, the thing with Josh Rosen that has kind of dragged him down a bit in addition to this year, and it's kind of that Jared Goff effect where, you know, he had a bad team around him, and so people were quick to label him a disappointment. But when you look at his college tape, you see a very accurate thrower of the football who can, you know, who can be aggressive downfield, very good play action game. The biggest weakness of Josh Rosen's game was, I put it this way, that if quarterbacks were boxers, and we were going to use that analogy, you know, someone like Sam Darnold was kind of like the heavyweight with a big punch who liked to brawl. And he could win by brawling, and he wasn't very technically sound. Whereas Josh Rosen was kind of like the technically sound boxer who really knew great combinations and understood how to cut off the ring and be kind of a ringmaster and a ring general. But late in fights, where maybe he'd take a punch or two that was hard, he'd feel like he had to prove to everyone that he could also be a brawler in addition to a ring general. And he'd try and throw some sort of knockout blow that was risky, and riskier than he should have made, a bit riskier choice than he should have made, that would end up biting him because he was trying to prove to everyone that he was something more than what he is. And I think that that's where Josh Rosen is as a player sometimes, is that he tries to be a little bit more of a daring thrower and squeeze balls into coverage that he shouldn't, because it's almost like he has to try and prove that, when he's a much smarter player than that for 3.5 quarters oftentimes. And so that's the only real weakness I've seen in his game, you know, as a player, that he has to really mature past.
It's believed that the Giants will not take a quarterback in the first round. So obviously that would probably eliminate, you know, Kyler Murray. That would most likely eliminate Haskins. It could eliminate Drew Locke and possibly Daniel Jones. So with that said, if you had to match up these quarterbacks based on what they do well to the system that the Giants run, who do you think would be a good fit? Not necessarily of those four, but, you know, of the class in general.
Sure. And I think that if it plays out like that, Patricia, then the Giants should be Giants fans should be thankful. They should be very thankful that it plays out that way, because in my opinion, they would have a chance at the best quarterback in this draft, who just slightly edges out Kyler Murray, despite the fact that Murray has tremendous upside and probably more upside than the player that I have at the top of my board, but isn't quite as good in the pocket. And that's Will Grier of West Virginia. Will Grier, I think, is the most creative, intuitive, and accurate quarterback, who does the best job of integrating all of his various skills on the field. And he's someone that's been overlooked a good bit by the media because he didn't just absolutely shine at some of his audition phases of, you know, this pre-draft process. But that's fine, because Russell Wilson and Kirk Cousins and a variety of other players didn't either. You know, Will Grier is someone who is an attacking quarterback down the field, whose accuracy is quite up there from the 10 games I've charted of he and Murray and Haskins. He's right in there with them. He moves around better than Haskins. He's someone that can create off platform well, and he can, and, you know, despite what I heard Chris Sims say, you know, on an NBC Roto World recently, that he has to load up to throw the ball, I only really saw that on some opposite hash deep throws, as opposed to one, two, and three-step types of drop setups and fires where same side of the field, he can throw 30, 40, 50, 60 yards down the field, pinpoint. And I thought I loved his aggression. I loved his ability to deal with pressure. And he's someone that I think plays pretty smart. And he reminds me of kind of a young Tony Romo type of a player who can really become a Pro Bowl player at some point in his career with the right fit. And I think that the Giants would be a very good fit for him because he's good at spreading the ball around and he makes his receivers better. Sometimes his receivers get more love in this class than he did. And I've studied those receivers, and I'll be the first to tell you that Will Greer made them a lot better than they made him.
You're listening to Locked On Giants with Patricia Traina and special guest Matt Wallman of the Rookie Scouting Portfolio, RSP. We're going to take a short break, come back, talk some more pre-draft activity with Matt, so stay with us. Welcome back, Giant fans, to Locked On Giants. Patricia Traina with Matt Wallman, our special guest. Matt's agreed to come back on the program, and we're having our discussion about quarterback. And Matt, before we move off of quarterbacks, I want to just ask one more follow-up regarding what you were saying in segment one about Will Greer. I'm curious where you have him rated on your board.
He's first on my board, actually. He just slightly beats Kyler Murray in terms of his depth of talent, and the difference between Greer and Murray really comes down to how they play in the pocket. Kyler Murray can climb the pocket from pressure. He's very good at when there's pressure from the edge, he can hitch a couple of steps and throw in rhythm, and that's good. But when he gets pressure up the middle, what you see from him oftentimes is that he does what a lot of really mobile quarterbacks do who haven't refined their game yet. And that's where he will tend to hop or jump cut or jump stop or run to a spot to avoid that pressure. And then he has to reset again, get his eyes back upfield, and be in a position to throw the ball. And he's not doing it in rhythm. And there's often times where the pressure that he's facing, if he just took a more economical approach to moving away from the pressure, he could have been in a position to throw the ball in rhythm to the next read in his progressions. And he often misses that because his first inclination is to move fast, to run, and not to run from the pocket, but to just run in general to an open spot. It's kind of like thinking about looking at the Roadrunner cartoon and watching the Roadrunner kind of flit from spot to spot. You know, he may be really quick with doing that, but he's not going to be quick enough to be able to stay in a balanced position to throw in rhythm. So that's an issue that can hurt him because he's not putting himself in a position to make the easiest throws and find the easiest solutions in difficult situations in the way that top quarterbacks do in the NFL. Whereas a guy like Greer does a better job of that. And I'd say that's probably the difference between the two players. Murray has obviously more upside. He's going to get picked earlier. There's good reason for that. But he reminds me of a Carson Wentz type of player, despite the fact that he's shorter and much faster and has a bigger arm and maybe even a better deep arm. But the way that he wins is if you put him in a system like Philadelphia's, where he could scramble around without having to move around in the pocket in rhythm and throw, but can kind of scramble and buy time and throw it over people's heads, or he can drop quickly and get rid of the ball fast within the first 25 to 35 yards on quick hitting, you know, zone read option style type of plays where his legs are a threat like Carson Wentz was before he got hurt, then you have similar types of executioners in terms of what you do in the offense. Murray just, to me, happens to be a more athletic version in terms of speed and arm, whereas Carson Wentz is a bigger guy who, you know, wasn't as accurate downfield past 35 yards.
Turning our attention now to receiver, I think the last time we spoke, Odell Beckham Jr. was a member of the Giants. A receiver did not appear to be a glaring need, and since then, obviously, the Giants have moved Odell to Cleveland. They have Sterling Shepard they're bringing back. You know, he's on a rookie contract year. They re-signed Cody Latimer. They re-signed Benny Fowler. But, you know, really, you know, if you're looking in terms of names, you're not talking an overly impressive group, but, you know, a group that's nonetheless productive. Is there a guy in this draft class that you feel can you know, I'm not going to say be the next Odell because Odell's a generational talent, but maybe someone capable of really contributing a lot of what he did so well for this offense.
Yeah, there are a number of guys that I think that can be good fits and become playmakers that the Giants could use as kind of the centerpiece of their passing game. I think Hakeem Butler is on that list. He's gotten the highest grade I've given a receiver in quite some time. I think that he's talked about a lot because he drops a lot of footballs compared to what he should, that his drop rate's kind of high. But his drop rate is really fueled mostly by focus drops. And, you know, Brandon Marshall and, you know, Terrell Owens and Chad Johnson were guys who had higher than average drop rates, but they tended to be focus drops where they're trying to, they tracked the ball well, they used the correct hands technique, they just looked away trying to look upfield, and they occasionally had those in their game. That's kind of where Butler's at. Otherwise, you're looking at a guy who's 6'5", 227, and can run routes with the ability to bend and drop his weight like a slot receiver. I mean, this is a guy that's beating, you know, Iowa defensive backs who've gotten into the NFL and played reasonably well. He's beaten them on, you know, whip routes, which are normally routes you'd see either the elite tight ends who can bend run or top slot receivers run, where you have to kind of bend and drop your weight towards the inside and then, flip your hips and go back to the outside. And watch him beat cornerbacks playing him tight on that route, and they had to interfere with him to prevent him from catching the ball and turning up an open sideline, is a pretty telling mark that he's going to be able to do that with a variety of routes in the route tree. And then he's also a guy who wins the ball in the air very physical. Miles Boykin, he was the real combine wonder, not DK Metcalf. You look at his 20 shuttle and 3 cone drill, and he ran times like a slot receiver in a 6'4", 220-pound body, and he also has a 43.5-inch vertical leap, and it shows up on tape with his route running and his ability to win the ball and his skill after the catch. He could be a very nice find, play multiple positions for you, just like Butler. And then even an A.J. Brown, if you want to move your receivers around a lot, A.J. Brown's that guy who is kind of more of a big slot receiver, but he has enough speed to win on the outside. He has enough size to win with the ball in the air, and he's very good after the catch. Deebo Samuel would be another one who I think fits within that realm because of the fact that he can play in the slot, but he's probably more of a receiver with, you know, Odell Beckham's dimensions. He's the type of guy that can kill you with a death blow in terms of a long play or 1,000 paper cuts, making, you know, 5 guys miss in the open field and taking it for a long touchdown, and can add in the special teams arena as well. And the last one we can add is N'Keal Harry, who can play a little bit big slot or play on the outside. But I think that he's a little more limited in what you're looking for the Giants in terms of if you're looking for someone who gives what Odell Beckham gave. I think the first 4 players I mentioned are probably the best bets.
Just backing up a little bit, you know, there was when the Giants signed Golden Tate, a lot of people were like, why are they signing a guy who's basically a slot receiver? And I just want to get your take, if I could, on Golden Tate and Sterling Shepard. And really, you know, are they the same player, or do you see a noticeable difference in the skill sets?
Yeah, there's a noticeable difference, but it's kind of under the microscope because you can say both they're pretty much slot receivers. They're not, you know, very tall. They're both very quick. They both run good routes. But the difference is that, you know, Sterling Shepard is a tough guy, but Golden Tate is a physical player. And there's a difference between being tough and being physical. Golden Tate will take the fight to a defender. He's someone that can punish players in the open field with first contact. He's better at bouncing off contact and keeping his footing. He's a very skilled runner after the catch. And he also has some skill to win the ball in the air that Sterling Shepard hasn't quite shown at the level that you would like to see in the NFL. And I don't think that ever was his game to that extent. He had occasionally nice plays at Oklahoma doing that, but he's not that type of dominant athlete where I think Golden Tate has shown a little bit more of that as a player who could do that on the outside. So he gives you a little bit more flexibility. It may also be a signal that they want to keep him, and maybe they'll let Sterling Shepard go you know, at the end of his contract year, if they can add another receiver that they feel like will be a better fit along with Tate, and then roll with Tate, Ingram, and, you know, and this draft pick along with, you know, a supporting cast of somebody maybe like Latimer.
And in terms of, you know, just how Shurmur seems to deploy those receivers, it looks like he's going to spread that ball around to different guys and whatnot. I mean, so when you're looking at potential prospects for the Giants at receiver, how important is it for them to be, you know, really versatile to where they can, you know, get those mismatches?
I think it's very important because if you have a veteran quarterback like Manning, or even a young quarterback who you're going to rely on to, you know, grow into that role and be a field general, you want someone who's going to be able to make adjustments in the line of scrimmage to find those pre-snap advantages. So getting guys like a Boykin or a Butler or a Brown or Samuel who can play multiple roles is important. And this is why the wide receiver position often has so much variation in grades, because I talked about my top-ranked guy was Dante Pettis last year. And when you look at that, the RSP ranks players, you know, basically 1 through 80 or 1 through 100 at that one position. But the wide receiver is three different positions, sometimes four if you want to add the idea of them playing on the wing as kind of a small tight end. And so there are teams that may sometimes grade a player like Pettis and say, you know, he fits as an X, as a split end for us, but he's kind of small. He's not quite as strong for what we want. And considering him as a split end, we may have given him a fourth round grade. If we look at him as a small slot, he's a little too big for that. He's not quite as fast. Maybe we give him a fifth round grade there. But then if you decide as a team that you're looking for a slot player, or you're looking for a flanker who can play a little slot, then you might filter that down and go, here's eight guys who can do that. Dante Pettis is at the top of our list. He fits what our offense wants to be, and we're going to give him a low first-round grade. And if he drops to the second, which we think he will because other teams aren't looking at that combination the way we are going to get a little bit of a value for him. And I think that for the Giants, that's probably the case. They're looking for someone who will probably be able to play multiple positions for them, and that may filter down the list a little bit more to where you may look at someone, and I'm surprised every year why certain players drop really low or they're picked much higher than we thought. And I think that that's kind of the information behind that, the context in terms of how teams look at receivers, because they don't score 80 players like, say, I do. You know, they're looking at if they're looking at a need for a specific role, and then they're looking at a fraction of that. And that depends on whether it's one role or a combination of one to three roles that they're using to pick that player.
You're listening to Locked On Giants with Patricia Traina and special guest Matt Waldman. We're going to take our final break, come back. There's one more position I'd like to speak with you about, and then I'm going to give you an opportunity to tell everybody where they can find your wonderful work. So stay with us, folks. We'll be back after these messages. Welcome back to Locked On Giants with Patricia Traina and Matt Waldman. He authors the Rookie Scouting Portfolio, RSP. It's a really unique and different type of scouting tool. If you guys are into these draft prospects and these draft previews, it's something you definitely want to check out. And he does have a website. And at the end of the show, Matt's going to tell you about the great product he has. It's already out. It came out April 1st. But before we get to that, Matt, I want to ask you about something that I can see happening. Now, every year I tell people the Giants always throw a curveball into the mix. And by that, I mean they take a player at a position and you say to yourself, what are they doing? Why are they taking a player here when they've got guys? And I could see them very easily dipping into the tight end class this year, even though they have Evan Ingram, even though they have, you know, Rhett Ellison, they just re-signed Scott Simonson. From what I understand, this is a very deep tight end class, probably one of the deepest in quite some time. Do you think that they will dip into that class, and who might be some of those guys that might fit what they're doing?
Yeah, I think they could, and I think it would be a smart decision on their part, because as good of a receiver as Evan Ingram can be, and as good of a player after the catch he could be, there are some valid arguments that you might look at him and say he's better off as a receiver than he is as a tight end, and maybe it would be better to use him as a second tight end who can also be split outside and not have to lean on him as a front line, you know, front side blocker in line. And so there are a lot of players who could do that role, and that frees up Evan Engram a little bit more. Guys like TJ Hockenson in the first round, you know, he's one of the best all-around tight ends that I've graded in several years, and that includes O.J. Howard, who is a fantastic prospect and a better athlete than Hockenson, but we didn't know for sure whether he could win a lot of those jump balls and 50-50 types of throws, because it wasn't shown a lot yet at Alabama. And he actually did mention that he had to work on that aspect of his game during the offseason after his rookie year, and you saw him improve in that realm. But Hockenson can play pretty much everywhere. He's an excellent blocker who can handle defensive ends. He can handle linebackers. He can perform every kind of block you're looking for with the quickness, strength, and leverage that you would expect. Irv Smith is kind of a Delanie Walker type who can probably be a good enough blocker for you and be an improvement of what Engram provides, but he's also a good downfield player and very good after the catch. Very smart, aware of his open surroundings. Jay Sternberger out of Texas A&M is another one who I think could provide more for you as a blocker. He's a rugged receiver who adjusts well to the football, and I think he's only getting better as a route runner. And then there's guys like Dawson Knox, you know, out of Eli Manning's alumni, former college at Ole Miss. Knox is a guy who didn't catch a lot of passes because he was overshadowed by the receiving talent they had there, but he was on Bruce Feldman's freaks list in terms of athletic ability, and he showed that in workouts. And when you watch him catch the ball, it's very natural. He takes, you know, he's able to handle contact. He's a good runner after the catch, but he's also someone that can play fullback. He can play on the wing. He can play in line for you. And then there's even a few other guys we could probably get at if we had more time, like Kahale Waring and Travon Wesco and Foster Moreau, who are all solid receivers, if not very good ones, who, you know, Wesco could come in right now and be an inline blocker for you, could be excellent. And he's got great quickness and be a good short to intermediate range receiver. I could see him being a Giant all day long. He's kind of like a more athletic Chris Cooley and a little more durable. And Kahale Waring is kind of a Zach Ertz type of player, who is a former water polo goalie who's still a little bit new to the position. You can see he has a little bit more to learn. And Moreau's kind of like Knox. He's been overshadowed at LSU in terms of the role he had, but he's physical. He's a tough blocker. He can catch, and he had a really nice combine in terms of his athletic ability. So he's underrated as a receiver and could have a better career as a receiver and blocker than he did at LSU.
How important is it when you're selecting a tight end to kind of match up with your offensive line's characteristic? I know they're two separate positions, but they do work in tandem together. And I would think you'd want to have, you know, your tight end complement your offensive line and vice versa, you know, to some degree.
Yeah, you absolutely do. And I think that it comes down to what are you looking for your tight end to be? If you're looking to have him have a function of being a fullback, where he's going to be helping out as a lead blocker and you're going to be running more gap-style plays or man-style blocks, then you're going to be looking at guys who have the mobility to work across the line of scrimmage quickly and get square and deliver a punch, or be able to help lead the charge on the front side with their lateral quickness to be able to, again, target the correct man and be able to technically move that man in the direction that you need to. If you need him just kind of helping to double team on the backside, or you're asking him to run a little bit more of a zone where he doesn't, you know, where you're looking for that ability to really just kind of take the next man over, then that's a little bit different. Might give you a little more flexibility depending on, you know, again, if you're looking at their size, their strength, and really how technically sound they are in terms of being able to generate leverage. Some guys are more receivers than they are blockers. So if you're looking for them just to be kind of just an addition to the line as a kind of something that can supplement the line, that's one thing. But if you're asking them to be a main, you know, cog of that line where they are, providing pivotal blocks on the front side of plays, then that's going to be important, a more important thing for you to determine about whether that player is a match.
And then final question, this doesn't have to do with the tight ends, but I'm kind of curious to get your take on this. For as good of a season as Saquon Barkley had last year, where can he get better?
Well, I think for him, he's going to have to part of it is going to be just the cohesion that he has with his offensive line. You know, the offensive line is going to have to get better so that he can rely on them to do what they're supposed to do assignment-wise. And when they do that, then it's going to be the onus is on him to make decisions where instead of trying to be the home run hitter, you know, on certain plays, he's going to have to just decide, let me just take the short gain or even the short loss on some of these plays and not try too hard to be the big play guy in every situation. And I think that if he can do that, he can cut down on the number of losses that he's generated with his offensive line, because it's in tandem with those guys. If they can cut down on the losses that they generate in the run game and be more efficient from a standpoint of having shorter gains that either just keep the team in good down and distance situations when he's not hitting those big plays, and he's just a little bit more wiser about when and when not to do that, based on where they are on the field and the down and distance situation, I think you're going to see a more efficient runner, and more importantly, you'll see a more efficient offense that gives him additional opportunities to touch the ball in high leverage situations.
All right, Matt, tell everybody about the RSP, where they can get it, and what kind of specials you have going on.
Sure. The Rookie Scouting Portfolio is a 14-year-old draft guide that's devoted to, like Patty said, the offensive skill positions, has 191 players profiled in it. 129 of them get in-depth profiles, but I essentially take you through my process, which is rooted in best practices in an operations management sphere in terms of how to monitor and evaluate performance. And that's something that I specialized in a corporate career for about 15 years as an operations director and quality director. And I applied it to football, and now it's something that, the guide has become something that not only do fantasy players love it, but media, regular subscribers, as well as people who do work in personnel in the NFL, at least from what I'm told by Division I recruiters that I know, who say that it's one of the more popular guides that they use to cross-check their work at those positions. You get the RSP, which is 1,081 pages, bookmarked PDF, easy to navigate. It takes you through my process in an entertaining way that goes into great depth on these players with various rankings by position, explaining how I come about my rankings, and you can see how I really contextualize each of the skills that I look at. Everything's well defined. I have a full glossary on how I even define what it is that I'm scoring. So if you wanted to go as deeply and do this yourself, you could learn how I go about my process. That's how transparent it is. And in addition to that, you get a week after the NFL draft a post-draft guide. If you're a fantasy player, it's great because you get a cheat sheet that kind of mixes my rankings with average draft position of those players in fantasy leagues during the weeks, during that few days after the draft where leagues are starting to do their drafts. And you can find a sweet spot for, those players. And I do depth chart analysis as well for the entire depth chart that player goes to, in addition to updated rankings. And then you get also put on my mailing list for my newsletter that comes out monthly from June through December. And I update rankings 3 times a year with that. And that's all for $21.95. Most of my readers tell me that I don't charge enough for the publication, but I always like to over-deliver. And I can promise you, if you've seen my work at Football Guys or in the past at the New York Times or some of the things that I've done with the Rookie Scouting Portfolio, it's the best thing that I do in terms of this space. And so you can get that for $21.95 at mattwaldman.com. You can take a video tour of the publication, and 10% of every sale goes to Darkness to Light, which is an organization that is devoted to preventing sexual abuse of children through training of people and individuals, as well as community groups, schools, athletic organizations, and also teaches them how to deal with the fallout of sexual abuse when that happens, unfortunately, so it doesn't, the effects on the victim aren't compounded. So it's a great cause, and I'm proud of it. I've been doing that since 2011, and I think you'll really like it. Give me feedback about the book if you do get it, and I look forward to hearing from you guys.
Definitely worth checking out. I know I'm gonna sign up for it. Matt, can't thank you enough for the great, great insight, the material. Always a pleasure to have you on. And Don't forget to tell people where they can find you on Twitter. I know you're on Twitter too.
Sure. Simple enough. Matt Waldman, @MattWaldman, just my first and last name.
All right, folks, make sure you check him out. Really good stuff. One of the underrated guys out there. You don't really hear his name a lot, but it's starting to come out now. So check out his work. Really good stuff. On behalf of Matt Waldman, this is Patricia Traynor. Thank you so much for joining us on Locked on Giants. We'll talk to you again soon. Take care.